Now on RTE Radio 1, time for this week's Countrywide with Ella McSweeney.
Good morning and welcome to Countrywide. Up for you this morning. Children driving tractors is a time the law changed. A Tipperary suckler farmer on the fine art of surviving, and in Cork, musicians inspired by century-old folk songs. 51551 for your texts. Countrywide at rte.ie is our email. And before we start, like so many of you, the heartbreaking news that four young people lost their lives in Clonmel yesterday evening. It is just an unimaginable loss, and our thoughts are with their family, friends and the community in Tipperary this morning. Well, later this year, members of the Irish Farmers Association, that's about 70,000 farmers, will cast their votes for the next president and vice president. The term of office is 4 years. We don't yet know the full lineup of the candidates, but we do know that for the first time ever, there will be a woman on the ballot box. I'm very happy to welcome Alice Doyle to the studio. She is contesting the vice presidency. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning, Ella. Delighted to be with you.
Thank you so much. You were born in Carlow to a beef, sheep and tillage farm family. You then became a primary school teacher while also working with your husband, Tom, on the farm in Gorey in Wexford. You met during your involvement in the Machra National Committee. You've got three grown-up children now. How big a decision was it for you to decide to put your name forward?
It was a huge decision, but based very much on encouragement and experience. I've spent a lot of time in IFA, actually all my married life I've been involved in IFA to some extent, you know, very little in the beginning, but it increased as the years went by. And by being involved, but at local and then at national level, I saw how important farming is to the community, to the environment, or to the economy, really. I saw how important that was. I realised that farming needs strong leadership going forward. I know that I can give a lot of that. I have those, you know, good leadership skills that I have developed over the years through my on-farm and off-farm work. And I feel that I can do that. And I got huge encouragement from my farm family committee, who are mostly women, from a lot of people, members throughout the country, from north right down to the south, who said it's time for a woman to be involved. And it's not just token woman, you know, that woman candidate. It's very much that you are the candidate who fits both bills at this stage. You have the ability, we hope, and we also believe that, you know, being a female, it's that balance is now needed within the organisation.
What do you think it says about the IFA that it has taken until 2023 for a woman to finally be on the ticket?
I don't think it's any different than any other organisation. We see, you know, the likes of the GAA and other big organisations, that women are now only coming to the front. And even in industry and in agribusiness and in most businesses, women are only in the last 10 years really coming to the top of the business. And I think that's more cultural than anything else. I don't think it's anything specific to farming or specific to IFA. Women were always involved. They were always involved at the, probably at the, down at the lower levels, but they were particularly involved in the farm itself, but didn't always come into the leadership positions. Some of that was due to time commitments, to rearing families, not having that time to get out to be there involved. That's changing, thanks be to God. I see a lot of women coming forward, but that, I think it's more cultural than anything else. And just like every other organisation, we are now reflecting that within our organisation, that women are coming to the top.
And what do you think the IFA has lost over the years from not having women in positions of power? Because as you say, I mean, the women have always been there, but they've so often been invisible, particularly so in the IFA when it comes to positions of power.
I think women bring a different perspective. You know, you take any family unit or any business where you have a men and women working together, you get a much better balance of views and points of view. And women do come with a different skill set too, and they come with a different point of view as to how things might be approached. And I suppose because we, you know, the old adage, we multitask, we do multitask, and we can see things from different angles all at the one time. Men tend to be much more focused on the one thing. And I think by bringing a woman on to any committee, you bring on that balance. No more than if we could say vice versa, that if you had an all-female committee and you bring a man or two onto it, you will get a different perspective as well. So I think, I wouldn't say that we have lost out much, because the women were still contributing very much, and very much at home and in the discussion around the kitchen table. They were very much part of what was happening, and the men would have been bringing forward some of those ideas. But I think the physical presence of a woman and the impact that she can make on the discussion and on the logical progression of things, and just a woman said to me recently, women are very good at follow through. They don't let things slip. Men are very good at seeing the big picture and the goal, and they go straight for the goal. But sometimes they can have great ideas, but they get sidetracked by something. Whereas women will say, did you do that? Did you do that? Is that finished? We have to finish that. And I think that's something that I particularly can bring, because coming from my background of off-farm and on-farm work, I'm very used to, you know, having goals set, following them through, making sure that those goals are met in so far as we can, but also incorporating all other bodies and organisations and whatever other else is needed to make that happen.
Why not president? Why did you decide vice president?
A couple of reasons. The first one is I think, you know, I'm very aware of what I can do. I would be capable, I think, of being president, but I'm also very conscious of what I want to do and can do and do well. And I would prefer to be a good deputy president than bite off the presidency and maybe not as make as good a success of it. And I think by being deputy president, I can contribute more in that I can give it the energy, the time that it needs and the what it wants.
But are you tempted to go for president?
Sorry.
Were you tempted to go?
I have been asked. I have to be honest.
Would you change your mind at this stage?
No. No, I am very comfortable in going for this position, because I believe I can actually do it, and I can do it within, I suppose, when you say a comfort zone. I will always be at the edge where I will have to learn new things constantly, but I can still feel that it's within the comfort zone of being able to learn. I would be somewhat concerned that if I took on the presidency, that the pressure of what I would have to learn and have to continue to do would put so much pressure on me that it might affect the quality of what I would do. I would prefer to do quality rather than quantity.
Land is often, I mean, it is kept in the family name, thereby favouring male inheritance. And I just wonder, is it time that we had a conversation about women maybe not changing their surname? Why children only take the father's name? Does this need to change? Wouldn't that be quite a simple way of getting this issue about, you know, the barriers of daughters inheriting out of the way?
Look, that issue of changing the name, I don't think that's going to make a huge difference. And we do have a lot of young women who still retain their name when they go on to a farm. And when, in particularly where a woman owns a farm and a man marries on, she holds her name. But lots of women are holding their name going forward. But I don't think that's the reason why, you know, women weren't going into farming. Now, we do have an increasing number, quite an increase of young women going into farming. They are keeping their own name. But I think the reason that women weren't going into farming and weren't being the selected person wasn't to do altogether with the name and retaining the name on the farm. It was more the fact that that women weren't being considered as the one to do. It was just the male. And that, again, is a cultural thing. But because there's now a huge effort around inheritance and succession, where we sit down now and we discuss around the table with the family who wants to farm, not who has to farm, it who wants to farm. And we have noticed a considerable lot of young women who are now putting their hands up to say, I am the one who has the most interest in farming here. And it's being very well accepted within the farming circles. You will always have the odd person who will want to say, oh, we don't want the name to change on the farm. Yes. That will be in everything, whether it's a drapery business or a butcher's business. That, you know, what's over the door is very important.
And just finally, briefly, you're involved in the Green Ribbon Walks, which is an initiative to help positive mental health among farmers. It is starting in September. Just remind us how farmers can get involved.
Very important part of the role that I do as chair of the Farm Family and Social Affairs Committee, that we look after the health and mental health and well-being of farmers. And we're encouraging farmers to come out to these walks. We have 16 of these walks throughout the country, right from Mallin to Mizzen. Nearly every county, you can see, with 16, it's quite a few. And counties joining together. There are walks in forest parks, there are walks in community parks, walkways, and we're asking farmers, please come out and come this walk. Take time away from your farm. Mm. It's really important to get that break. Take that half day. You know, years ago we took our Sunday afternoon off. Doesn't matter what day you take off, take a time away. Gives you clarity when you go back to the farm. It releases the pressure that builds up when you're working at home. You get to communicate with your fellow farmer, because, you know, farming is an isolationist.
And a problem shared.
A problem shared is a problem halved. Yeah. And it's a very enjoyable walk as well. Most people, it's a nice leisurely walk. Everyone from the baby to the granny on the farm can go out. But we're also asking people who are not farmers, you know, the general public, come and join us. We want you to share with us, and we want to share with you. We all live in the rural Ireland, and we want to be part of that. You to be part of our community, and we to be part of your community. So come and talk, come and share the chat, and I think we'll all go back a better person to whatever job we go back to as a result of that walk.
And there are more information, there's more details on that on ifa.ie, along with the fact that any member of the IFA can put themselves forward to be nominated. Nominations close on the 12th of September. Alice, best of luck.
Thank you very much.
With the elections. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. And you're on your way now to a show, I gather.
I am. I'm heading down to Kilkenny, down to Iverk, a great show down in the southeast. Great gathering of farmers and rural people, not just from people from all round, really. So it'll be a great afternoon, I hope. I hope the weather stays up and I hope that they have fine weather for it, because that's huge for shows, the work that goes in. I was secretary of Tullow Show in my youth. I understand very much the work that goes into these shows and the effort that it takes. So I wish them a very successful day, and I'm looking forward to going down and meeting the farmers of Kilkenny, Tipperary and Waterford, particularly down in that area.
Well, safe journey, and thank you very much, Alice, for coming in this morning, Alice Doyle. We head now to Tipperary, to Tony Grogan's Suckler Farm in the Glen of Aherlow. Suckler farmers keep animals for the production of beef, not milk, and the distinguishing factor is that their calves stay with the herd and are fed by their mothers until they're at an age to be sold on. Tony used to be, in a previous life, an intensive pig farmer with 20,000 pig unit. Today he's a pedigree Angus breeder. Well, Hannah Quinn Mulligan went to meet Tony and to talk about the future of the suckler herd. They began in his woodshed, where Tony told Hannah about his family's history on the farm.
Hey Tony, how are you?
Hi Hannah, welcome to Glen of Aherlow.
It's a lovely spot.
Smashing here.
And what's this that you have in here?
Oh, it's just a bit of a workshop come, I don't know what else, just mess about with a bit of timber here.
It looks like a little bit more than just messing, because there's some very nice pieces of timber here. There's a lovely bench, and I notice, are those your initials that you put on them?
No, they're actually my great-granddad's initials, William Hennessy. We found his old branding iron for tools. Back in his day, they used to make their own handles. And of course, it was metal. Everyone came in to help at grain or at hay or whatever. Of course, they brought their own forks. But they wanted to be sure it took away their own forks too. So they were able to brand all their implements.
So you were able to trace it back. So how many generations have you have been
here? William is fifth generation here. He's fifth generation, so.
And you're a suckler farming now. You have pedigree Anguses.
Purebred Angus suckler herd, yeah.
You were pointing out some bits of wood. Are you making your own owl boxes? Because you're in acres.
When I get time to do it. When I get time.
Right, you're going to show me this owl box and some of the Anguses as well. So I'll let you lead on.
Lovely stuff. Right, Hannah, keep to your left or you might disappear there. This is the bottom of the field. Have to be prepared for a long winter here. Pretty steep. We're in a valley, the glacial valley from the Galtees. Half the Galtees were dumped here in this hill behind us, which formed this hill. So I have a dry mountainous field at the top, good field in the middle, and a bog in the bottom of every field. So basically, once it starts raining, September, October, November, they have to go in. So, by the way, we're just passing here, we're just passing the owl box.
Okay, look at that. And do you have barn owls in the area?
There were, definitely were in the locality. But again, a lot of rodents, bait put down, so it's killed off. We have buzzards, sparrowhawks, kestrels. I've seen a goshawk on one occasion. Spectacular flyers. But I'm hoping to get the owl in. I've stopped using rodenticide.
We'll talk about that in a minute, because you're part of the ACRES scheme, the new agri-environmental scheme. But first of all, just tell us, how do you farm here?
Roughly a 2024 cow suckler herd, purebred Angus, selling breeding bulls to the dairy boys and breeding heifers as well.
And are you a full-time suckler farmer?
I am, yeah.
That's a rare thing, a full-time suckler farmer. You don't meet many of them. Most of them are part-time, nearly all of them. I think there's about 70,000 people with beef cattle in the country, and nearly all of them are part-time.
Yeah, look, I'm part-time farmer, part-time dad taxi as well, three teenage girls. But yeah, I'm going to have to consider as well another source of income. They're heading for college now, and accommodation fees and prices are through the roof.
It has been the driest June, and then followed by the wettest July. How's that impacted the farm?
Got my slurry out very early. It was lovely and dry. Well, got 50% of it out on my silage ground. Went to get it out on my grazing ground. Too wet. Even for umbilical, which we've changed to here. Fantastic system. got my first cut silage done in April, lining up lovely for a second cut and possibility of a third cut. Has hay in mind, and then it started raining and didn't stop.
And what's that going to mean? Are you going to have to buy in feed, or what's going to happen?
So I will target my better bales for earlier in the winter, and as the winter goes through, then once I've all the AI done, I'll just gradually introduce the poorer stuff.
Because you're quite a technically minded farmer as well. I know you're measuring grass, which is a rare thing too. Usually it's only dairy farmers, but you're measuring grass and you're in Gene Ireland to improve the genetics of your animals.
Okay, look, it's going back to my pig days and my pig training and my pig experience. We had to, in the pig game, we had to do everything and anything. Mill our own feed, do our own AI on the farm. You just had to cut costs, cut costs, cut costs. And of course, they ended up then with their price being cut, being cut, being cut. Deja vu coming around again with beef prices, you know.
Well, it's interesting because there's been a lot of talk in the media about beef prices this week, especially, I guess, in the run-up to Christmas. There's an idea that they're going to be quite dampened. I mean, general quotes now are around €4.60 per kilo in the conventional non-organic market. Mm-hmm. How would that suit you? Would that make ends meet on this farm?
No. And I don't know how the lads in conventional are surviving, you know, but definitely not.
Because you're selling pedigree animals, mainly breeding bulls.
Yeah.
So even if you're in organics, I think the organic quotes at the minute are around €5.50 per kilo. If you were finishing cattle for the beef market in organics, would that make ends meet for you?
Very, very tight. Very, very tight. Like that's, as you mentioned earlier, why are so many suckler farmers have off-farm incomes? They have to survive.
We're standing by this bird box that you have up. That's under the acres scheme at the minute. I mean, there's a maximum payment. I know you're in a cooperative area, so you could get up to €10,500. So how much money are you getting from the acres scheme, the agri-environmental scheme?
From the acres scheme, 1,500-1,600 euros. That's all I can get.
And why is that?
Because if I take any area-based payment, that payment would be taken out of my organic payment. So I'm basically doing it for nothing.
And what would you have liked to see?
Look, there's an opportunity there for a scheme to reward excellence in hedgerows, excellence in biodiversity. Look at something that could be looked at maybe at some stage, or put a competition in for organic farmers. Because you can have a fantastic hedgerow if you manage it. But if you just abandon it, you're only going to get one species and nothing grown in the undergrowth.
If we lost the suckler herd, because we've been talking about it so much in the media in terms of the MAC curve, in terms of meeting emissions targets, what would the Irish landscape lose?
Take this area, we've three suckler farmers here lined up together. If they go out of business, it's going to have to become one dairy operator is about all that would operate in that area. Okay, everything's bulldozed, you just have a lawn there with two grass species in it.
I can see the whole thing upsets you though, because you're here on your farm and your neighbours are here in this kind of fairly mountainous area, and it feels like you're fighting to keep something alive.
Yeah, as we mentioned, we went back five generations there earlier on. I'm just holding this to hand on to someone, I hope. There shouldn't be a need for a cut to the suckler herd. Suckler herd is providing super quality beef. It doesn't have to be purebred Angus like it's all the other continental breeds as well, and those farmers.
And you're the fifth generation here. Will there be a sixth generation?
Hopefully.
Right. We keep moseying on. See some cattle, something a bit more positive. You're getting me to stand in a gap, I think, at some point as well, right?
That's if they're where they're supposed to be. If they're where they're supposed to be.
Hannah Quinn Mulligan with Tony Grogan on his farm in Tipperary. 51551 is our text number. We'll take a break.
Email countrywide at rte.ie. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
Whatever you want. Welcome back. Well, for many farmers, allowing their children to drive a tractor can provide invaluable help during busy times. But earlier this year, a 13-year-old boy who was driving a tractor died, and a few months later, a 17-year-old in a tractor also died. And these tragedies have resulted in calls for tighter driving regulations. Children aged 14 can drive tractors on the farm. When they are 16 with a provisional licence, they can then move and drive them on the roads. Della Kilroy has been taking a look at calls for the introduction of tractor driving competency tests for children, and she brings us this report.
Well, how's it going?
I've just come from the farmyard there, driving a Case Puma. It's a red tractor anyways. It's used for topping and slurry and general farm work. I just always liked driving. I always had a fascination with tractors and I always wanted to drive tractors. And I'm 16 and been using this particular tractor now a few months. That's it. Family wouldn't be from a farm now. I got into it about 4 years ago when I was 12. Basically, just driving tractors now is all I do.
I'm with 16-year-old Declan. Like many of his friends, he spent his summer working as a contractor, driving tractors close to his home in County Offaly.
I generally work for a contractor, drawing silage, and doing slurry and all that sort of stuff. But whenever I'm off, I try to be as busy as possible, working part-time for a dairy farmer, doing general work from fencing and moving cattle and all that sort of work.
You're 16 now. How did you feel getting your licence and being able to drive then?
Oh, it was the best day of my life. I had my own tractor at the time and I took the day off from school, went off, got my licence and I was going off driving for the evening. Just went wherever I want. There's a lot of my friends now and the minute they got the licence, the tractor's there waiting and they'd be gone. That'd be it. They'd be happy out.
You're going to show me inside?
It's just the handle here.
Earlier this year, you did the Health Safety Authority course. What do you think are the risks for teenagers if they're driving tractors in rural areas without training?
People don't have training and they're pumping big tractors like and very fast tractors. It's not as easy as it looks like. Tractors are getting very big now and trailers and machinery are getting awful big as well, like, and the roads aren't getting any bigger, to be honest.
Have you ever felt wary or scared on the road?
Oh, yeah, sure. You come across a lot of narrow roads while drawing silage or whatever. It could be, narrow roads and just... you hear of accidents here and there now. A lot of time young lads are driving too hard and, sure, it can happen.
While Declan took part in a tractor safety course in his school, it wasn't a mandatory requirement for his licence. Now, following the deaths of two teenagers on tractors earlier this year, there have been calls to tighten regulations. Farm safety campaigner and founder of AgriKids, Alma Jordan, wants to see tests introduced.
Well, I suppose this all really goes back to this whole culture. For far too long, I suppose the expectation and the acceptance is that children living on farms are allowed access to the machinery. They're allowed to work on the farm. They're allowed to drive the tractors. At 14, they are actually allowed to drive the tractors, not on the road though. At 16, with a provisional license, they are allowed to drive the machinery on the road. Now, the tractor that I grew up with is not the tractor that we have now on our farm. I mean, we had like a 50, 60 horsepower tractor. They're now in the region of 270 horsepower. And I think now we really need to look at a situation where we can't increase the age. I don't think increasing the age is going to make any difference here, because children as young as 11 and 12 years of age are actively using agricultural vehicles, not just around the farm, but on the roads. And it does go back to a whole, you know, we don't have help, we have a shortage in labour. So what can we work with here? And for me, it's really about putting a competency test in place.
What would you like to see changed?
Well, in November of this year, I think it's November 20th, actually, 2023, the rules around quad bikes are changing. It's going to be mandatory to have a helmet. It's going to be mandatory to have training. And that's for all operators of a quad bike. 16 years of age is, again, the legal age that you are allowed to operate a quad bike in an agricultural setting. We have changed the rules very quickly. Why haven't we done this with the tractors? Let's make sure that we actually start to break down this culture bit by bit, because I have met too many families who haven't come out the good side of this. I have held mothers who have lost children due to farming vehicles. This is serious. There are people out there who would do anything to unring the bell. And once again, when it comes to the fatal statistics involving children on our farms, tractors and machinery are the number one, whether that's in America, Australia or the United Kingdom. So let's really start putting a bit of common sense around this.
The age limit for teenagers on tractors has been debated numerous times at official level. Last June, Senator Gerard Crockwell again called for the limit to be raised.
Sadly, we know very little about what's actually happening in relation to farm accidents in general, and specifically in relation to children. We hear the tragedy of one family or other. I think what brought it home for me was a young child being killed earlier on this year. And what we have is anecdotal evidence. What we have is what we see with our own eyes. I married into a farming community down in South Kilkenny, and I've seen children, very young children, driving absolutely massive tractors. I think to be able to do that without the skills, I think it's nonsensical. I think people need to wake up. But I would say that at this stage, the Health and Safety Authority should insist that there is, similar to the Road Safety Authority, that there is a skill set that you must meet before you're allowed to drive one of these vehicles.
So what would you like to see in terms of the legal age limit?
I think the legal age limit has to be 18 because of the nature of the vehicle that we're talking about. I think that in order to qualify as a tractor user, you should have to pass a theory test. And then I think you have to be able to show that you are capable of managing the machinery.
What about for farmers that might say that their teenager provides a vital role to help out driving a tractor?
I would say to that farmer, you know, I fully understand the economics of having your children work the farm with you. But I would ask you this, the economics of burying one of them, how does that sit with you? And that is the risk you take every single day that you have one of your children on a tractor.
Doesn't matter. Just put your foot in the clutch and turn the key.
Back with 16-year-old Declan in Offaly, I asked him what he thought of the suggested changes.
I can see where they'd be coming from now, because realistically 16 is a very young age to be driving this size machinery. But look, lads have managed and they're well able for it, but you can see where they'd be coming from and changing the age, like. And I think something will happen, to be honest. I think there should be safety courses now every so often, especially in schools now, which is a very helpful thing. All the farmer kids are able to go off for the day and learn about tractors, learn stuff they don't know, which they should know, and just learn how to be safe while working on the farm.
What would that mean for you then?
I think I'd be fairly lost now if I wasn't able to drive tractors until for another year or two. It means a lot to me now. Like, it's hard to believe that a 16-year-old can drive this size machinery, but then if you're 18, you can't even pull a trailer behind a car. It's my life now, so it is. I love driving, and I don't know what I'd be at without it.
So I'll let you get back to work, so.
Doesn't matter.
16-year-old Declan Ganley from Offaly, ending that report by Della Kilroy. Well, to talk more about this, we're joined by John McNamara, Teagasc's National Health and Safety Advisor. Good morning, John. Thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you very much.
We've had a text this morning on 51551. Ella, so glad you're discussing this issue of 16-year-olds driving massive tractors with huge trailers of silage on our tiny, narrow country roads. As a granny who lives on a farm, I'm so worried that something terrible is going to happen. They should be 18 and this rule needs to urgently change. She's right, isn't she?
Yes, I think there is huge concern about young people driving tractors on roads. Now, it's a matter for the Road Safety Authority. They've done a study on all this area, and I believe that they're now in a position to, bring forward initiatives. I think there is room for initiatives regarding improving training. As Declan said, all you need at the moment is a learner permit, and you need to do the theory test, but obviously more can be done.
So as I mentioned earlier, children age 14 can drive tractors on the farm. When they're 16 with a provisional licence, they can drive on the road. And when they're 18 with a full licence, they can also then, am I correct in saying that they can take the tractor on the motorway?
No, I don't believe so.
Tractors are not allowed on motorways anymore?
Yes.
Okay.
Not with young people, not with a provisional licence.
But with a full licence?
Yes, I passed one last evening.
So they are allowed with a full licence?
I believe so, yes.
But isn't our texter correct in saying they should be 18, this rule needs to change? Is that not the most sensible way forward, looking at the brain development and the way in which teenagers do and don't analyse risk?
No, it is worthy of consideration. Yes, I do believe so. But the American kind of research on this would suggest that you've got to take, you know, people's competency and development into place. And as I said, I think the Road Safety Authority have studied it, and I think, they are the people to bring this initiative further.
Why historically have 14-year-olds been allowed to drive tractors on farms? Is it just because, back when tractors would have been very small, but also, as was mentioned, the need for labour on the farms?
Yeah, well, it's the need for labour on the farms. There's an abundance of research that shows that, farmers want their family, sons particularly, and daughters to become workers and to follow in their footsteps. So they also tend to normalise danger. They don't see the risk, so they want them to work, but they underestimate the risks. That is the clear research. So it arose in the UK. They have a code of practice there since the 70s, and 14 was the time to start driving in that code of practice, but the code of practice is a bit misunderstood. The tractor has to be small, they've got to have a lot of supervision, and the area has to be very free of hazards. So I would encourage, as an initiative, to have more training with family members, particularly parents, particularly fathers, so that they can train their young people and that they can supervise them adequately. I think that's where the progress is likely to be made.
Would that not put a lot of pressure on parents to take responsibility for a 14-year-old on a farm? If they turn their back, then they might feel hugely responsible if something does go wrong.
No, parents have the responsibility in law under the Health and Safety and Health at Work Act. Now, on farms, according to the NFS, National Farm Survey, about 40% of farms have children. So, there's a massive number of children on farms, maybe 50,000. So we need to get the parents involved. And it's also very important psychologically, that they interlink, that training one-sided, the children without the parents gives a gap. Neither side knows what the other really need to know. So our experience and the research would say is that training the parents to train the children, would be the best way forward.
Talk to us a little bit about the change in legislation around quads that's coming in November, I gather.
Yes, on the 22nd of November, to drive a quad in any workplace, including farms, you need to have done a QQY accredited training course. So farmers who have quads should get cracking and seek that. The second area then is to wear a helmet, an approved helmet. So those two requirements are coming in. Now, I think driving a quad is crucially important. Overturning a quad, they're 400 kgs. People get crushed, in the chest, and they can bang their heads. So I think the crucial element is to drive the quad safely. But the law will require training from the 22nd of November.
The use of simulators, does the research show that helps?
Yes. Now, I'm delighted to say that we have a minister who is a junior minister, Martin Hayden, who has responsibility for farm safety within the Agriculture Department. And, through his good offices, ecologists have 18 simulators. Now, the evidence, training somebody in a tractor is a difficult job in the first place. But simulators help, and they give young people a perception of how good their skills are, and they're particularly useful with people with poor skills.
I just wonder, are we putting too much pressure on young people here? Young people are remarkable in their ability just to learn and to do things. But when we're talking about massive tractors that can potentially kill people, are we putting too much pressure and faith in them to be able to manage that through training alone. Doesn't the law need to come in here and say, do you know what, this is not viable for a 14-year-old or for a 16-year-old. We need to change the law to 18, as Senator Crockwell said.
No, I would broadly agree. I think and we had an international conference on farm safety in the last few days, and we had people from all over the world at it. You know, but what they admire in Ireland is our legislation that isn't in any other country, and it is a very solid platform to work on. And I think you're absolutely right that we need the supports around farmers need to be strengthened, you know. But you, on the other side of it, you heard Declan, and you know there is this passion, especially among young people, to drive tractors. No, but I do agree that we need to control that passion, and we need to put safety first.
And of course, this isn't just a farm issue; it is an issue about public safety as well, isn't it? Because at the point where 16-year-olds are on roads, it's about everyone else. We've got two texts here. Hello, I'm glad to hear your discussion. I would add to the mix the frequency with which I see young men driving huge machines past my house while looking at their phones, obviously texting. Shocking and terrifying for other road users. And another text, there are two issues, safety and protection of the child and safety to everyone around them if the child is driving on farm or public roads. For more information on the training aspect, Chagas website, is it?
Yeah, well, I'd say the health and safety website, you know, and our website, Chagas, www.ie, and in the health and safety portal. Now, I would say that we are organising an EIP on Farm Family Connect, and it's to train all the family on health and safety, and it's online.
Super, and that's the European Innovation Partnership.
Partnership, and yes. We're recruiting farmers. We're looking for 300 farmers to participate. They'll contact the Farm Relief Service or ourselves.
John McNamara from Chagas, thank you very much indeed for joining me this morning. Now, 140 years ago, Francis James Childs from Harvard University visited England and Scotland to collect generation-old folk ballads, which changed as they were passed down the generation. He then published them in a book. They're known as child ballads, and they continue to be a rich source of inspiration for folk singers around the world. And that includes Cork man Jimmy Crowley and Australian-born Eve Telford. Brian Lally went down to Cove to meet them.
Francis James Child, he was an American ethnographer. He was smitten by the songs, the great themes and the kind of noble themes and tragic themes of the child ballads, like Barbary Allen, The Three Sisters, songs that have charmed our imagination.
Will you go down, Lord Thomas, she said,
listening to Young Hunting, a song from the collection of child ballads from the mid-19th century. It's from an album called Hello by the voice you heard earlier, Jimmy Crowley, and his partner in life and music, Eve Telford.
He came to Scotland and England and made his famous collection, but he kind of didn't think Ireland had anything worthwhile, you know. We just came across very interesting travellers' versions, and we stuck to that premise that we're going to just do all travellers' versions of these songs, though.
Eve told me more about what makes these versions unique.
So the travellers would have travelled round to different parts of the country, also to Scotland and England and on the Bothy houses in Scotland, and that's where they would have heard the songs. They were all transmitted through the generations orally. As the singers grew up, they would have quite a vast store of songs. For instance, the Scottish traveller singer Jeannie Robertson, she had a great store of songs. And when her young daughter, Lizzie Higgins, who became a singer, she said, can I sing those songs? I want to learn those songs. And she said, and Jeannie said to her, you can't sing them yet, you haven't lived.
Was there e'er a lady in this wide world that I loved near some more, that I loved near some.
Fans of the work of Planxty, Christy Moore, Paul Brady and many more will know these songs from other incarnations. There's a track of the album which could almost be a rough draft of the Raggle Taggle Gypsy.
Twas late that night when the Lord came in, inquiring for his lady, oh, It was the cry all around her door. She's away with a gypsy lady, oh. Go saddle to me, me milk white steed. Me brown horse is not speedy, oh. I'll go ride and I'll seek a me bride. She's away with a gypsy lady.
He kind of only saw the English and Scottish, and he didn't realise that there were all these relative sister songs in Ireland. And I think that it's very much a cultural exchange, because these songs actually weren't travelers' songs originally. I know many of them have been kept by the travellers, because the travellers in the past, they didn't have television or radio, which they do know. So they kept on singing them, whereas the settled folk didn't. And now we're two settled folk who are singing them and bringing them back to the settled folk.
There are songs of love, songs of loss, and many songs of frivolity. But it's the bigger epic songs that Eve is particularly attached to.
One of my favourite songs on the album is Young Hunting, and that's quite a rare version, which we learned from the Roscommon traveller, Martin McDonagh. It was wonderful when we were taking these songs on tour. We met people like the great singer in Roscommon, Declan Coyne, who had known Martin McDonagh, and when we went to Wexford and we knew people who knew Mary McGrath, and these, most people would be more familiar with Young Hunting. There are lots of American versions, which it was wonderful to come across this.
I will make a cage of the best of gold instead of that briar tree, instead of that briar tree.
Faith, I'll not go to you, Lady Margaret, he said. Oh, I'll not go to you at all. To your own true love, sure you'll prove false to me. You'll prove false to me.
I wondered about their musical beginnings. Jimmy got the music from his father.
I often thought, moved to tears, like listening to Traviata and My Carmen and all that. And one night he said, look, we're going out tonight, you know, to the City Hall. There was four men bounded out on stage with Aaron Kenzie's come and tell me, Sean O'Farrell. And my life changed that night. He was saying, like, OK, I'm going to the opera and all that, but says, this is what I like.
And Eve Telford was barely into double digits when she started to sing.
So the first song I performed age 11 was Donovan's Isle of Islay. How high the gulls fly, oh Islay. How sad the farm lie deep in play. Felt like a tide left me here. Then I realised, what about the songs that influenced them? Because they're not traditional songs. And I went back and back and back until I discovered all the old field recordings.
Titles like The Famous Flower of Serving Men, Young Hunting, The Gypsy Lady, Lord Beckham and The Creel. What draws Jimmy and Eve to these songs?
I suppose they were just, you could nearly hear the fact that they weren't rustled out of a book, you know, they weren't read, they were just learned. And I just can't believe that they had such a richness in their heads, like, for hundreds of years, you know.
And candles born.
Brian Lally with Jimmy Crowley and Eve Telford, and their new album is called Hello. That's it for us this morning. I'll talk to you all next week. Have a great week.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.